Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's that time once again for your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Greetings, weary travellers, or not, depending on when you're hearing this. I hope you're well, hope you're doing okay. Thank you again to all our listeners. Thank you again to our Patreons. Thank you all for helping us do this, because without you, this is nothing. We really appreciate it all. Thank you so much. Good times are ahead of us. It's coming. I'm telling you, it's coming. So our guest this week is the CEO behind Calm and the campaign against living miserably. And I've done some bits and bobs through other podcasts with Calm. And, you know, what we do here at Insane in the Membrane is all about looking after ourselves, looking after our mental health, telling our stories so that other people can go, oh, yeah, I do that. And people feel sort of less alone. You know, and we try to talk about, you know, positive things that can, things that could maybe help you, you know, to improve your mental health. So it was a joy to get Simon on to talk about his journey, well, how he came to be where he is. He's a fascinating guy, fascinating story. And it's a real pleasure to have him on, as it always is with all our guests. But really cool and excellent. He's an excellent man. And another one, you kind of, I'm like, yeah, we're having a pint when we're allowed out. I can feel it, you know. And we probably said that at the end. But yeah, a lovely dude. It was wonderful to connect to him and all the wonderful work that they do at Calm. So coming up is Simon Gunning.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
How did you come to be doing what you're doing? What was the key moment for you? What made you go, I need to do something?
I didn't really have like a road to Damascus, and I feel like a total fraud, really, because I do quite often, people will quite often think that there's some sort of moment of realization that you want to do something positive in the world and stop doing all the silly stuff, all the self-centered stuff, and really give something back. Mm. But I didn't have that at all. I was frankly dicking about doing stuff which was of no value to very many people at all. Honestly, get this. This is what I was doing. I was advising advertising agencies on how to make themselves more valuable to sell.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? getting up in the morning or going to bed at night thinking, I know what I'll do tomorrow. And it was just a bit shit, really.
Yeah.
And I've done really, really interesting and exciting things in the past and found myself doing that. Always just really, really wanting to do something else. And then just had a phone call from the chairman of Calm, who's a guy called James Scroggs, who was once met and never forgotten. He is literally 7 foot tall.
Oh, really?
He wears baby blue or pink overalls and a massive red hat. Honestly, honestly, he's got hair down to his shoulders.
It sounds fantastic.
He is. He spent quite a lot of time in fashion. He had a boutique on Newburg Street and on Dean Street for a while. And we were having a bit of a heart-to-heart one day, and he was saying he was a bit disillusioned with the fashion business and where he was. And I said to him that Scroggsy should enjoy this because for Soho has always had a twat in a hat, and it's your turn. and he's an inspiring bloke.
Yeah.
He rang me up, and I just knew him through a vague route, and said, "Can you come and have a look at this thing, this Calm, and see what we might do with it if we ran it more like a sort of a modern communications media brand, all of those." But what we might do with it if we were to really give it a punt. And the previous founding CEO had just left, so I just went there for like a couple of months just to have a look.
Yeah.
And wrote a report and stuff and got to know the people there, and that's 4 years ago. And it's been brilliant. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But it isn't me giving something back. I'm not that nice, honestly. It's fascinating and it's exciting, and it does feel good that we're not selling anything to anyone. We don't need to tell lies.
No.
We are only helping people, but we're doing it in a really interesting way, I think.
Yeah, and that's it. I think it's I was the same as you. This podcast kind of evolved. There wasn't a plan. It was like, I'm going to do a podcast. I'm going to talk to people I know to start with. And then it just kind of subconsciously evolved into men talking about their feelings and about the things they've gone through. It's not necessarily talking about, I'm depressed, I'm this. It's like, yes, I have depression. This is how I deal with it. You know, it's that sort of conversation. And we've had all manner of, I've had trans people on. I've been talking about what it's like to be trans because, I don't know. So I have, these are questions that I've been asking. And it's become this now. I feel good that I'm actually doing something because I see the numbers for like male suicide and it shocks me to the core that this is still happening, And so I feel good that I'm doing this, and not in a big-headed way. I really care about people. And so you must be getting the same thing. You must now get a feeling of a buzz from it that you wouldn't have gotten before.
There's definitely a kind of a mutual exchange that, I don't help people directly. And
no.
I can't advise people on what to do when they're feeling really shit. But there's definitely, even though I'm doing it once removed, because the people on our helpline are fantastic, and that's sort of the core of where we're directly helping people. But then all of our campaigns and our activity, whether that's in football or comedy or music, are about directly delivering service. So
yeah.
we'll take the piss. Like we put with Seat cars, we put a massive pair of ears on a building on the Euston Road and just wrote "grow a pair" in the middle. We're dicking about quite a lot of the time. We're definitely hijacking contemporary communication techniques. And we are delivering a service in doing so. But in running the thing, I do get that vicarious feeling that we're definitely helping people. But what you definitely get, and I'm sure you're getting it as well, is that when somebody says, occasionally somebody that we've helped, I'll meet them and they'll say thanks, and there is unquestionably a chemical exchange that you get. It's a transaction thing. You get a little drop of whatever it is in your brain that goes, oh, that's good.
Yeah,
just made somebody's life got a little bit better, maybe the opposite, having done other stuff in the more sort of rapacious ends of the media business where you think, I've almost certainly just made somebody's life a bit worse by getting them to eat more KFC or something.
Yeah.
it's maybe the opposite of that that's the good thing.
You're not paying back for all those years of, I know what you mean. But there is that. Like you said, we can't advise. We're not experts on these things, and advice is a dangerous thing. But just through people telling their stories, people get from it what they want. And I think the main thing that people get from these stories, these interviews that we do, is that they fundamentally, everybody's the same. It doesn't matter your background or that, fundamentally, we still have ups and downs. We're still happy and sad, and we still go through certain things. And, you know, and that's a really important bit about this, is that people don't feel so alone.
Yeah.
You know,
The human condition.
Yes. Yeah.
We have a principle. So the mental health kind of, I guess, charitable and medical establishment that says that one in four people will suffer with ill mental health in their lives. And I just sort of say bollocks. That's it's only if you feel that you're able to helpfully and instructively grade degrees of unhappiness and say that one in four people will get to a point of real, real unhappiness. And that's one form of distinction. But if we're going to say that one in four people will have a shit time, then absolute bollocks to that. The principle, as far as we see it, is that everybody will have shit times, and some people will have deep, protracted shit times.
Yeah.
But everybody's going to have short, brief shit times.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of dualism, the ability to understand both conditions of happiness and sadness, that means that we can understand the human condition, and that when we're going to say, if we say one in four, then we're saying that the three strong people have to look after the one weak one. And then you get into all this sort of othering, you know, that sort of terminology and that kind of thinking that I must confess, I didn't understand trans people. I didn't understand it. And I've tried to understand it a bit more and understand it now as part of absolutely of the human condition.
Yeah.
That a trans person is going to have the same kind of brain chemical exchanges as anybody else.
Yeah.
But actually, the conclusion I've come to is that they're just about the most brave bloody people on the planet. You know, that what a hard and brave thing to do.
Yeah.
But that no matter what clothes you wear, Eddie Izzard says they're not women's clothes, they're Eddie's clothes, doesn't he? Whatever clothes you wear and whatever you're doing, but we have this same ridiculously expanded organ between our ears that is prone to do the odd unpredictable thing.
Yeah. I think that's it, isn't it? We are unpredictable, really, but and a lot of our mental health problems come from the fact that we're trying to be, that society is trying to put us in this framework and make us predictable, but we're just not like that. We are animals, really, and that's why we're suffering now, because we don't fit into this framework.
Yeah, and it's the framing of the brains in the human condition doing what they're meant to do. We're framing it as mental illness, and there's this. I like saying the phrase nominative determinism because it makes me feel clever. And I've also just about nailed it. Nominative determinism. There's this there's a shortcut. I think I would suspect we're sort of similar ages.
Yeah.
And it, to me, having spent a long, long time in the record business and the telly and stuff, that just those two words, mental illness, make me go, woo, or mental health, make me go, woo. Because it's, you know, mental health is a little bit like a BBC Two documentary, or it's other people where their people are collecting tins for people that you don't really want to sit down next to on the bus.
Yeah.
And, you know, and in that, just that phrase, I think we can have a problem in that we can shortcut through to negative connotations. Where, and I'm not for a second suggesting that what we do is we swap it out. So somebody once suggested that it would be really amazing if we swapped it out for football terminology. So you could say, yeah, I'm feeling a little bit Kevin Keegan, or I'm a little bit I give myself a yellow card. No, we don't need to deal with that sort of bollocks and tie ourselves up in other stuff. But where it's an issue to me, for men especially, I haven't come across many people who would sit down with their mates and say my mental health isn't very good, so there are other ways around, and it's not just about language; it's about framing what it's like living in 2021, for God's sake.
Mm.
fucking hard. It's framing that in terms of what we're all trying to carry out. We're all trying to do what we have to do today. And sometimes it can be really tricky because your surroundings or your inner workings are finding it. So, but to call it mental health to me just puts it in a box, which is really difficult. I'm not suggesting I've got a better alternative, by the way.
No, I know what you mean. It's the, there are, and I think what's happening now, because what we're in at the moment is this mental health has been spoken about for many years, but we're now in this big wave of people talking about it. But we're also now, what there seems to already be this kickback against it as well. It's like, oh, not this again.
Yeah.
And this is the barrier we're now facing that we have to break through again, is to keep the conversations going. Because I get it all the time, like especially for mates, like, oh, we've already done this. Why are we still doing this? You know, no, because work still needs to be done. The numbers are still ridiculous for male suicide. The suicide in general is through the roof, and there's still work to be done. And so so like you say, the language needs to change a bit in order to push through, I feel.
And it works. I mean, so we sort of landed on jumping into cultural channels pretty quickly. I mean, in fact, way before my time. But stuff like football has worked so well for us. So we do, well, we don't do it. There are lots and lots of football tournaments that happen around the country in support of Calm. And it's great that they give us some money. That was dismissive. It's absolutely brilliant because they pay for everything. And it's fantastic that people do that. It's also fantastic turning up to, for example, there's one that didn't happen last year, obviously, but one that happens in Highbury. Run by a couple of blokes called FC Not Alone, and going along to that and seeing 150, 200 young men playing football, I think it's 7-a-side, and they've got Calm badges on.
Yeah.
And I do my little sort of bit at the start, a little sort of thanks for coming sort of stuff. And seeing those groups of blokes joined with an agenda which is focused on football, and they really want to win. It's properly competitive. Actually, they want to win so much there was a ringer at the last one.
No.
Honestly, it was like for someone like Huddersfield or something. And you could just tell, just watching the football, it was like, he's different.
Yeah.
At the back, and it was like, nobody's scoring against this team. And that's great, because the focus on it was the football. But there was this tacit acceptance that all of those brains being carried around by all of those bodies that were going to chase after and kick a ball had the same human condition. There wasn't any, haven't we covered mental health, and can't we just get on with the football, and why do we have to talk about this stuff?
Yeah, right.
It was a real acceptance from young blokes about to kick the shit out of it on AstroTurf. We are all the same. Am I back to that initial point?
Yeah.
Unless, other than Piers Morgan, obviously.
He's a strange fella.
But how can I now find myself liking him a bit?
Sometimes he nails it. You go, that is exactly what's going on. I think the thing is, social media comes up a lot on this. And social media you're not allowed to go, actually, Piers has made a valid point there, because of some of the other stuff he says where he hasn't. Yeah. And whereas social media is very sort of down the line, it's like, look, you're either against him or you're over against us, or you're with us, and you can't. I've lost followers when I've said that. I've gone, oh, Piers actually made a valid point. He's like, oh, well, you're clearly you're this, you're that, and off you go. But well, be off with your head. And you're like, no, he just makes a point there. The rest of what he says is shit, but, you know.
Nuance.
Yes, nuance. That's exactly what's needed. Yes.
And also, the good people do bad things and bad people do good things. That is, I think that's lost. Because they do, don't they? I mean, Joe Biden has done bad things.
Yeah.
But I'd much rather have Joe Biden than the other one.
Yeah, well, this is it. I think people got to a point, they were like, yeah, but Biden's just as bad. It's not about good or bad anymore. It's getting rid of Trump. And then once we get rid of him, then we can deal with this. And I think that's happening again with this government, is that, I mean, we don't get into politics too much on here, but it's about who's good for the job, who's good for the country. And you see all these, you see Matt Hancock giving contracts to his mates, and it doesn't do any good for the morale of the people. You're like, well, if they don't give a shit, why should I?
Oh, yeah. No, there was that, David Sedaris, American writer, he said that if you have to consider about whether you're going to vote for Biden or Trump, actually he said it about Clinton or Trump, he said it's like you're on a plane and the flight assistant comes over to you and says, are you ready to order lunch? And you say, well, sorry, what's on the menu? I haven't had a look. And she says, well, there's the chicken, or there's a plate of human feces with broken glass in it. And you look at the menu and you look up to the flight attendant and say, how's the chicken cooked?
It's like, yeah.
There is sometimes an absolute absence of nuance.
But having been in the, so you were in the music industry before this.
Yeah.
I mean, you must have seen some things there. I mean, that's...
Brilliant.
I mean, I've read the book Kill Your Friends.
John Niven was at EMI and I was at EMI after that, so right. There are characters. So when that book came out,
yeah,
I was at EMI at the time and we all knew who some of the characters were based
on. Oh, really?
There was an Omerta.
And you must have seen you, that must have affected you being in that environment, or you just weren't aware, you're just so wrapped up in it.
I was in the record business for about a decade as a manager, and then I went to telly, Frying Pan Fire, and then went back to the record business after that to EMI, and it does. It's really, I find it interesting looking back on it and the sort of things that you tolerate and think are just the norm. Mm. You know, the kind of behaviours that you would just not accept in any other part of life are sort of funny. I mean, there's a well-known French record executive who ran EMI for a while who was barred for life from travelling on British Airways. The things that he said.
All right.
And you can look it up. It's on the internet. If I don't say it. But that sort of thing was just tolerated. But actually, I was listening to something. What was I listening to? Oh, I know. It was Jay Rayner, who I bloody love.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Jay's great.
Really great. Have you heard Desert Island Dicks?
Yes.
So him on Desert Island Dicks, talking about Gordon Ramsay, the portrayal of working in a kitchen, of being a chef, is to bully people to the point of tears. And the other people have said, well, Gordon's not actually like that. It's a TV persona. And Jay Rayner saying, well, why do it then? Why would you do that? And there's footage available on YouTube of him working in, I can't remember, a very famous French chef. He's just bullying people to the point of tears. And the point is made that if that's how you perceive success, that it's whoever is the biggest dick in the room is the successful one, and they continue to perpetuate that behaviour, then you're going to see that is the route to success, or that is the mark of masculinity, or that is the mask of dominance, and that you need to be dominant, and all this sort of stuff about, well, if you're not strong enough to be in this industry, then you don't deserve to be here, because that's what it's like. That's what the record business was like in the 90s and the noughties. I mean, definitely it was that certain French record company executive. I've got the funniest anecdote, but I can't say it. It's just A, I'll go to prison, and B, it's just...
Oh, so, no, you leave us hanging.
When you turn the microphone off, it's just brilliant.
Okay.
But he would exhibit behaviours that are utterly unacceptable, misogynistic, just awful bullying. But, and I haven't said his name, so...
No, you're completely fine.
But people would see that as the route to success and would try to emulate it.
Yeah.
And then I spent some time in advertising and you see that there as well and in other areas too. So, yes... I guess we are going to perpetuate the wrong kind of models of masculinity until we try to really short circuit them.
Yeah, definitely. I get it all the time. People say to me, you've got to be more aggressive. You've got to be, and telling me what sort of language to use as I'm trying to push myself up the ladder. And I'm just not that way inclined. I'm not that person. I don't, you know, and then you're made to feel bad because you're not that person. I think someone said to Neil Innes just before he died, and they said, you know, you were part of these things and the Ruttles and everything else, and, you know, but you should be more well known, you know, you should be more famous. And he just said, I just didn't have very pointy elbows.
Yeah.
And it's a really nice point. And like you say, that that myth is now perpetuated by it. It's still like you have to be a bit of a C word to get anywhere in life in general. And then, and you saw that with Trump, and you saw that with other politicians, is that you've got to be this psychopath to get to the top. And it's not everybody's like that. Why can't you just be really good at what you do, you know?
But where does that put us, though, if one group or one individual or one group of individuals is prepared to follow that and others aren't? That you're not going to, and I'm disturbed by the by our opposition. Yeah. I'm not saying that with any affiliation to either side.
No,
but you need a functioning opposition.
Yes,
when you've got 125,000 dead, as it soon will be, when you've got the worst economic fallout of the G9, you know, and you've got all of these things. We need a functioning opposition. I mean, we need a functioning opposition when everything's going well. You need to have people held to account.
Absolutely,
And what happens if an opposition is going to say, "I don't"? I mean, maybe it doesn't have to be a political relationship. You know, in any environment, if good people are going to say, "I'm not going to behave in a bad way," it's really difficult, because then does that mean badness prevails? And that kind of, I guess, to reroute it back around to what we're meant to be talking about is if we allow, let's say, advertising to continue to portray men as, poor parents, bumbling idiots, tough guys, muscly guys, sporty, but not actually any touch of realism. If we allow that to carry on, just because, but even though it sells more stuff, what are we doing?
Yeah, well, it's funny. It's now we've got people in positions that are seen as masculine, you know, like you've got footballers coming out now, you've got Ricky Hatton came out and talked about his depression, and that's what's needed, isn't it? Those people in those positions to come out and say, actually, I've really struggled. Like Peter Crouch has been very vocal about it, and I think that's what it needs, is people that are put up as those symbols of masculinity are the ones that will make the biggest change by saying, not every day, I don't, this is not me every day.
Totally, absolutely. Yeah. I went on a radio program quite a while ago, a couple of years ago, when I was new to all this and didn't really quite know how to make my point. And I was on radio too, on Jeremy Vine. It was really exciting. I had to go, and you know, they set it up so you have to have an argument with somebody. So there's got to be somebody with some absolute bullshit perspective that you've then got to argue against. And this is when we were doing some work with the two princes, and Freddie Flintoff, and our brilliant patron Professor Green, and we'd made a film which I thought was just ace, which was just Professor Green and Freddie Flintoff in a theatre, like a theatre, having a chat, and Freddie Flintoff was saying, because you know that he effectively was shitting it every time he went out to play.
Yeah, right. Cricket, yeah,
as you would, you know. You're exposed with the whole world watching you do what you're meant to be brilliant at. What if you're not brilliant at it for a minute? And it affected him in quite profound ways. He's got the biggest hands I have ever encountered on a human.
Really, he's another one. He's about 8 feet tall, and he's massive.
He's massive. But it was like when I first met him, it was like, do you remember Vic and Bob used to do stuff like they'd have like a tiny hand on a stick? But they're making this film, and so Freddie Flintoff is staked with the name dropping. Elton John told me never to name drop, but on this occasion.
Wonderful.
So Freddie Flintoff says that he was really worried that if he admitted to feeling really bad about life when he was this incredibly successful sportsman and this absolute boy's own kind of masculine hero, that people would feel worse of him. And there's this little pause, and Professor Green, Stephen, our patron, said, and did that happen? And they both just burst out laughing. Of course it bloody didn't.
No.
Of course it didn't.
No.
Everybody thought it was great. So I had to go on the radio, which was obviously a great privilege and I enjoy. And this bloke who I was meant to argue with said, don't we think we've really had enough of all these people looking for sympathy?
Wow.
I mean, you've got these princes, they've got, you know, all the money that they need. Why do they need sympathy? And I wasn't fully equipped at the time, because I was new to all this, just to say, what a load of bollocks. They're not looking for sympathy. What they're doing is showing that the archetypes of masculinity as we've kind of inherited them are falsitudes.
Yeah.
They're made up by somebody else.
Yeah.
They're an act. They're an artifact. They're an attitude that can be put on and can be displayed in a sort of a strutting cockerel.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you've got to take it off. It's not real.
Exactly.
It's not life.
Yeah. Exactly. And there is that, I mean, the added pressure as well with someone like for Freddie in his position where, you know, all it takes is one bad day at the office and he's written off. And that pressure is, you know, it doesn't, people seem to forget about all the good that he'd done, all the, like, up until that point, he'd been smashing it record after record. And then he has one bad day at the office and everyone's like, oh, he's over, he's done, he's finished. And I think the most beautiful thing he did was to turn around and talk about his struggles, to be open up about what it was one of the best things I've ever seen from a sportsman. And because there's a lot of mates I've got that are big on their sports, that's how they communicate with each other. It's all about sport. But when you start talking about mental health and go, well, how do you really feel? You know, how are you really going? And they all clam up straight away. But now you've got Freddie and people of his like that, and Ricky Hatton and people like that coming out and going, no, 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 there are days where I just stare at the ceiling, just I don't know what to fucking do. And I think it's so important. And we've still got a long way to go, unfortunately. But at least we're making a start. That's the thing.
We are.
Yeah.
I don't know that we're doing it right yet. I don't, because I'm just thinking while you're talking there that I sort of short circuit through because I listened to the Ian Stone one that you did.
Oh, yeah.
Which is quite strange because I hear his voice on the Arsenal podcast that he
does
as well. So you kind of forget which podcast you listen to as I angrily stomp around in my neighbourhood for the 50th time that day in lockdown. And we are getting we're definitely, there's sort of green shoots of how to do it. And I think Tyson Fury comes into that as well. It's like somebody who is absolutely just doesn't have any issue whatsoever with talking about, I mean, he's quite severe ill health on occasion.
Mm.
And then you mentioned Marcus Radford and people who are doing really amazing things. But just because of my Arsenal affiliation, that from our side, so we've got Hector Bellerin, who is very, very cool and absolutely will talk about anything. I mean, he is a total dude, right?
Right.
Absolutely love him. And yes, he's not been quite as good since the episode, but I still absolutely love him. But I think I wonder if there is an issue there where Hector is clearly an outlier, isn't he? He's not... somebody who isn't an outlier. It would be wrong for me to name another footballer or sportsman, but he's clearly an outlier. And does he have... Is that more difficult? So, like, revolution is only ever carried out... It only ever happens when you've got a successful middle class, right?
Because they've
got the time to sit around on a chaise lounge smoking a cheroot.
So exactly.
So is the problem if we only get, like, super successful Tyson Fury, Freddie Flintoff, the out there Hector Bellerin? It's not Bellerin, is it? It's Bellerin. Hector as this outlier. When do we get to the point when any sort of everybody, anybody and everybody, a journeyman, a normal person, but still who has to carry this unhelpful gender trope around with them, because you can't ever show any form of humanity when you're playing sport, for example. How do we get to that point where it is just the absolute norm?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's funny that with this, with these podcasts, people respond more when it's a name. When it's someone they go, oh, I recognise that person. I'm willing to listen to that person. Yeah. You're like, yeah, but, and I've had people on that they don't know. But
good luck with this one, by the way. About three listens.
No, this is going to be smashing. This is going to be great. People want to see the people behind the words. That's the
thing. Of course
thing.
They do. He furiously backtracks. Ramesh is an ambassador, so you could link it back to. Why don't you call it Ramesh Ranganathan's ambassadorial relationship?
We'll do a spin-off podcast just of that, just the tenuous links to Ramesh Ranganathan. I try and have some people on there that you might not necessarily know, but have still got an interesting story to tell. you know, and it is a harder sell. It is a harder sell, and it's a shame because just because you don't know these people doesn't mean that their story is any less relevant than Freddie's, you know.
Yeah, we live in a world that craves fairy dust, don't we?
True. You know,
maybe that's another issue. Maybe that there's we're only comparing our condition to people whose condition we perceive is better than ours, and maybe that's the ultimate rug pull. Is that
yeah?
I can find it isn't.
Yeah.
What's it called? Affluenza. There's one of those books that I can't remember who wrote it. It was probably Alain de Botton or somebody.
Right.
Like it wasn't. I haven't looked it up. Obviously, it's the kind of book that. In all honesty, you can, if you read The Dust Jacket, you pretty much.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Black Swan.
Oh, yeah.
Save yourself $12.99. Just read The Dust Jacket. That's fine.
Just do the keynotes online, yeah.
It's easy. But that book, Affluenza, talks about how we only compare ourselves, yeah, to people who have got a better car, a better house, a better partner, a better lifestyle, that as we perceive it, that we are hardwired to be unable to compare ourselves to the poor bugger that's having a horrible time and say,
yeah,
that's not me. And maybe that's why we are prone to what to be more open to listening to successful, as we perceive it, people's stories than people who are like that, which is a shame, obviously, because most people aren't successful in that or aren't perceived as such, and so you miss out on a lot of information.
I think that's, you've made a valid point there. That's a really interesting point that
bloody hell.
Connected. Yeah. Well done, finally.
Not now.
I think it's part of that, again, it's the human condition, isn't it? I think it's all part of our survival technique, isn't it? To compare ourselves to someone that we see more successful than somebody else is our way of surviving, I guess. It's like kind of like, oh, I want to be that person where they are. And do you know what I mean?
I do.
Yeah, I think that's in it. Like you say, we are hardwired. That's in our DNA.
Is it psychological Darwinism?
I think so. Yeah.
That's quite good.
That's good, isn't it?
We should write a book and put a really shit dust cover on it so nobody
Put Romesh Ranganathan on the cover.
Yeah. Actually, we'll just put his name to it. We'll write it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? That maybe that is something that means that we strive for more. But then actually, from an evolutionary perspective, that isn't right, is it? Because it doesn't genetically predispose us to be more successful. It just means that we consume more, doesn't it? Doesn't that just mean that we end up being more damaging?
Probably, actually. Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Now we're in this massive machine. A machine you've been in, you know, you've been on the deck of this need to consume. We are now seen as we just consume. And the more you consume, the more successful you're seen to be. It seems. Do you know what I mean? We're now part of it, and it's. I don't know what the answer is, because what's the alternative now? Well, if we take away, we go, look, you don't need to have all these things. That's not going to make you successful. Having the love of a family and friends and people around you, that's especially this year, that's what really shone a light on this year, that we actually, the human connection is more important than owning the latest pair of trainers. But how do you change that? How do you swap that around?
Do you reckon, so let's June the 21st, it's all about data, not dates, but June the 21st.
Yeah.
What do you reckon? So let's say that it's 5 o'clock, the afternoon of June the 21st. Are we going to emerge from our bunkers blinking in the sunlight and at last be able to go and hug a stranger and sit down and have a conversation with somebody that we haven't met before and share our experiences? Or are we going to be elbowing each other out of the way at the bar, moaning about the £5.50 a pint, racing to get a table? I don't know. Do we build back better, or is there a danger that we build back?
I would love to think that this has taught us a lesson, and that we're going to recognise what was bad before and kind of miss those bits out, and hopefully rebuild a better society for ourselves. But I've got a horrible feeling that we'll just all of us, and I mean me as well, and all of us, we'll just end up falling back into those old habits, those comfortable habits, unfortunately.
Is that what we miss? Do we miss the negative side of it as well as the positive side of it? There was a moment of just absolute joy So I've got, as lots of people have, I've got a WhatsApp group with all the people that I go to football with and have done for years and years and years and years. And somebody, I guess it would have been sort of April, I guess, May last year, sent a picture to the group of them standing outside a pub in Hampstead or somewhere, holding a takeaway pint of beer.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, oh, it blows.
Just, yeah, like just the gold statue in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Just
exactly, that,
yeah.
Lifting the thing up. But and just like the purity, the joy of being with the other people, and you think that I'll see you in the library opposite the ground at some point soon, and we're all going to get these things back. I think I miss the bad stuff as well, though. I do. Mm. I miss being crammed onto a tube. I miss just the stuff that we're used to. And I guess, unfortunately, that might mean that we're doomed to recreate the shit stuff.
I think so. Well, I remember I've mentioned this a lot, but I read Ruby Wax's book, or one of her books, her early ones, and she hit the nail on the head where she said, well, human beings are more predisposed to negativity because that's what keeps us alive. So if you just wander around thinking everything's great, you're going to get run over by lunchtime. But you're always aware that there's something shit just around the corner. So I think that's why we do. I have to physically tell myself to be more positive sometimes. Mm-hmm. I hear myself moaning. But then, you know, there is something that I do miss. Yeah, there is that, being pissed off on public transport and moaning about the things. I mean, that's more, maybe that's a release, really.
Maybe.
You know.
Maybe getting annoyed about little stuff that doesn't really matter is actually a really positive thing. I saw, I follow, it's not actually Kurt Vonnegut because he died about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Kurt Vonnegut on Twitter, there's like a quote a day.
Yeah, and, yes, yes.
It's lovely. And one that I can't remember where it comes from, but it's something like don't worry about the small stuff because you'll realise don't worry about the big stuff because you'll realise in the end that the small stuff was the big stuff.
Yeah, 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 nice.
This is what's really nice, that the little bits, maybe it is in some ways a healthy self-protection mechanism to moan and get upset about the small stuff that doesn't.
I think it is. It takes the pressure off a little bit, you know, it's just this again. They're putting the train prices up again, you know, it's that. Yeah, 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 I think we need that. And I think people.
4 minutes, it's the Victoria line. That's not possible.
Running. Someone said that. I was running for the tube. Like, why were you running for the tube? What are you doing? There'll be another one in a minute. Relax. No one is fine. We do put a lot of pressure on ourselves. But you mentioned about reading, you said about that book. You're like, just read the dust jacket. Don't bother about the actual book. You get all you need. There's a real pressure on people to be well read. And like this, I have these conversations all the time, and like we should be reading all the time and consuming more words and this and that. But if you're not into it, it doesn't matter. Don't read a book. My missus doesn't read. She hates reading, and not because she's thick. It's just like she doesn't like it. It's like it's boring.
But it's who wrote that rule that reading loads of books means that you're a better person?
Yeah, exactly. Whoever wrote the first book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, whoever copyrighted book.
Yeah, it was God and his Bible. Is like, well, you must have more books. In fact, just this book is the one you need.
I reckon that one was ghostwritten myself.
Definitely paraphrasing.
But we do that building back thing is something that does preoccupy me at the moment, which is, I know I'm going to bring the mood down, but that's sort of, you know, sort of.
That's all right.
Quite often, which is there's been so much hidden and visible trauma over the last 18 months with so many people all the way around the world. But, you know, 18 months, not quite, is it? 12 months. But by the time hopefully stuff does properly start to change, it will be 18 months. And it's terrifying to think that we won't learn any lessons and that we will build back even potentially worse. That really worries me because we are going to be in difficult financial situations, aren't we? And do we have, back to that hugely pretentious point I made about needing a functioning middle class to have a revolution, but if we are in deep economic shit for quite some time, do we then find ourselves not worrying about our fellow citizens? And do we become more selfish? Do we then look at the way that we were talking about the role models of not giving a toss about other people, about being selfish, about does that actually become a prevalent way of thinking for a decade?
Yeah.
That frightens me. I've got a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old, and when all of this, the influence that we see from people like Marcus Rashford is fantastically positive.
Yeah.
For them, and for my 14-year-old boy especially, it's just they are the real role models for Patches, that is my son's name, and he will qualify how much he likes somebody by how good they are as a person as well. They might be absolutely brilliant at football, but they might not be very nice people, and that will make him qualify his opinion of them. But that's quite easily undermined if actually we go into a sustained period of, frankly, fuck you. You know, we go into a sustained period of. So, you know, I don't want to work. You don't want a 0 hours contract on Amazon, but it's that or it's Sports Direct, you know.
It worries me. Well, this is I think the businessmen are going to want this to click back to how it was before. They want us to be, they don't want us to be more aware, really. They don't want us to be going, hang on a minute, things were a bit shit before. Let's rethink and rebuild. They go, no, it was fine before. Don't fuck with it. Because then that fucks with our income. And
well, Morgan Stanley just literally this morning.
Really?
Exactly, don't fuck with it. Yeah, the CEO of Morgan Stanley saying, bollocks to this, you're all back in the office. The second you're allowed, you're back in the office, you're doing exactly what. And then he said something like, because the young people.
Right. Yeah, and that's how they do it. They're going to get advertisers in to show it so they can repackage the old bullshit, aren't they? They'll put a positive spin on leaving your house and going into the office.
But people are holding up Google as like a massive example of progressive thought, because they're not, they're even, you know, there are conversations happening about never going back to work.
Yeah.
And that's because they want a machine to do your job.
Yeah.
Like server space is so much cheaper than having to provide the free gym membership.
Yeah.
What if we build back worse? That's the problem. So I guess that what we have to do at Calm, just like to, you know, bring it back, is to keep campaigning, keep plugging, keep
exactly
smashing those assumptions in the face whenever we can.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, isn't it? Not to be swayed by any, and just keep plowing ahead and keep those conversations going and finding new ways to, because you have to, like I said before, you have to change the way the conversation is had, because people get to a point where they go, oh, this again, we've just done this, you know. So it's forever evolving to keep people interested, for want of a better word.
Yeah, compassion fatigue. I guess maybe is it possible to have compassion fatigue about yourself? I wonder. I suppose it is, isn't it?
Sometimes I do. I say, I'm like, I don't know. It depends what mood I'm in. Sometimes if I haven't had a lot of sleep, I get a bit, I'm tired of working on myself.
Actually, maybe compassion fatigue about yourself is almost exactly the definition of the problem, which is like, fuck you. You don't deserve to be happy. Maybe that's the precipice. Maybe that's the issue.
Well, I had a realisation recently where I had a big argument with my missus, and she just said, you know what, you're so obsessed with making amends for the past that you're fucking up your future. And the things I'd done in the past weren't even that bad. I'd just been a bit of a shit boyfriend. I've not done anything terrible, but I was just hanging on to this, that I need to repay a debt to how I am. I don't, you know, that thing that you say, I don't deserve to be happy because I was such a prick before. And I think more people need to learn how to let go of the past. You know, you're like that guy jogging in the park, dragging tires around. You know, your jogging's already hard. You don't need to drag tires around with you as well. And I think more conversations need to be had with that. Let go of the past. You were that person then. You're different now. You know, I imagine like the industry you were in before, you know, there's things that you witnessed and saw, and you know, and you go, oh God, that was a bit shit. But that was then. You're not that person now, you know?
Yeah, and you can be whatever you want to be tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think it's teaching by experience. So almost back to like Freddie Flintoff and Professor Green sitting in that theatre, teaching by experience that doing something for your immediate or long-term self happiness, so you know, for yourself,
yeah,
and doing things for the people around you is is again, to use the term, hardwired, is hardwired into us chemically to do us good.
Mm.
But when you overlay that through, or you bury it beneath layer upon layer upon layer of cultural appropriation for what you should, how you should behave, or how you, what you should attain to be. I mean, I can say all these words and I feel like a fraud because it's so completely ground into me from growing up in the 1980s, all the way through, that I still feel the need to say it out loud because I absolutely know objectively that it's true. But it does feel to me that there's something in me that still feels that I should have a better house and a better car. And why aren't I? And it's stuff will, honestly, I'll be, because I stomp about. I live in Twickenham.
Yeah.
I somehow failed to realise it wasn't on the tube when we moved here from Shepherd's Bush. I don't know quite how I...
it's a funny one, Twickenham, isn't it? It's one of them, yeah. It's like Crouch End, yeah.
Yeah, that's a weird place. I used to have to go there a lot. But I stomp about the place and I will have, like, honestly, I'll have a little thought or just... I'll be listening to you talking to Ian Stone.
Yeah.
And something will come into my head and just go, you should be president of a record company now. If you carried on doing what you were doing, you'd be president of a record company now. Why aren't you?
Yeah,
Why aren't you doing that? Why aren't you going first class to LA for a meeting about signing a band? Why aren't you?
Yeah.
And they just nip up behind you when you least expect them.
All the time.
Jump out. And I can then go, because I don't want it.
Yeah.
I don't want to be those people because I know that, I'm not saying they're not good people. They're brilliant people. And I laughed and laughed and laughed in advertising and records and telly.
Yeah.
Because they're brilliant, lovely, hilarious, creative people who are just the best bloody fun to be around.
Yeah.
And flying first class to LA to go to meetings at the record company is the best thing in the world. It's just fantastic. But I don't want to be that because I don't want to. I don't want to have to carry that on. And I do spend still a lot of time with people who work in telly or in those sort of industries. And it hasn't changed, really. There is progress and people are trying to talk about different sorts of subjects and talk about mental health and well-being and masculinity and what it means and role modelling in the workplace and those kind of things. But fundamentally, you do still have to turn up to that same kind of fight.
Yeah.
But why is it that I still have a little switch that flicks that says...
I get it all the time. I get it all the time. You know, you're nearly 50, Rich. You're 49. And what have you done? What have you done with yourself? You know, you should have a house by now, but you haven't got one of them, have you? No, you haven't. You're still dicking around. And it's little bits like that. And yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? That just pops up. Even though I've had a great career, I've had the last 16 years doing comedy, I've been phenomenal. I've travelled the world. And I should go, that's success. That is success. But it's just every now and again, there's that little voice. It's not enough, is it? Look what they're doing.
But you know that, you absolutely, surely know that people are going to look at your last 16 years and they're going to be walking along the streets of Crouch End or somewhere and go, you're a loser because you haven't done that. Even though you might be doing something that's successful compared to someone else. And I suppose we're back to the human condition.
It is, yeah.
What we've got to try to do is we've got to try to find ways to short-circuit that. We've got, there was a really, I found it fascinating, a piece of academic work that we've got a great person that works for Calm called JP who sort of keeps us grounded we have a clinical board of amazing psychologists and psychiatrists that make sure that we don't ever do anything which is going to do any harm.
Right.
We did a project called We did a thing called Project 84 with ITV in 2018, which was just mind-blowing, changed everything for us, changed, blew up the subject of, in this case, male suicide. We did it with ITV and with various other people, but it was incredible, and it won every award in the world, and it was brilliant. But this board of psychologists and psychiatrists made sure that we weren't going to do any harm because it was such a big deal. On a different perspective, though, this guy we have at Calm called JP brought some academic work to us, which is about the almost kind of the route to suicide from almost from happiness through to that, and you can see key points. So for Calm, we want to work across the whole continuum. So people like you and me who are, you know, relatively just absolutely fine and in clover walking around whispering to ourselves that we're bloody idiots because that's the human condition. But you know, generally okay, through to people who are absolutely fantastically happy and doing things, but right the way across that scale to people who are suicidal, which is where our helpline is incredibly important, and which is our mission. I mean, that is our mission. Yeah. So we believe that we can reduce suicide for everyone by focusing on high-risk audiences. Men, like you say, 75% of suicide is male. So men are a high-risk audience. People in the LGBTQ plus are a high-risk audience. Actually, people 16 to 24, and especially girls and women 10 to 21 are a high-risk audience.
Right.
So we focus on helping those people when they're at that end of that continuum as well as when they're at the other end of the continuum. But this piece of academic work showed that there are two key points right at the really dangerous end of that line, which are about a sense of belonging and a sense of self-worth.
Yes.
And what we've just talked about so much, where we talked about a sense of self-worth, but that sense of belonging, that sense of tribe, that sense of unity and community and people around you, which we seem almost to be like intentionally unwiring and dismantling in order to point to the individual who just did it on their own because they were man enough. And it's like the lone. What did I watch? We watched the ridiculous Jack Reacher films because, you know, with
14-year-old, you know. Sometimes you need it just to switch off those.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
But he's the loner, right?
And
Bruce Willis does it on his own.
Jason Statham does it on his own. Yeah.
I mean, we could continue with that, couldn't we? But that dismantling of tribal behaviours and of communities is something that we try to put back in place, and alongside that sense of self-worth, because you can short-circuit that route to real horror and terrible places by trying to supplement those things in our psychological diet.
Yeah,
and as we have a thing called Calm Clubs, where we have about 80 or 90 football clubs have a Calm badge on their sleeve. And it's not that they're running around talking about their mental health. We've just got that mark on
us. Just recognition,
recognition. It's just like we're aware of it. And there's that sense of tribe there, because back to the football tournament in Highbury that I was talking about earlier, there's a sense of camaraderie just because we're playing football against each other. But so we all love football.
Yeah.
They all love football. But they all understand that they're doing it with a Calm badge on their sleeve, which means that you're probably not a dick. but that isn't just in football, obviously. No, so we did Comedy Against Living Miserably with Dave, and we filled up Earth in Hackney for a load of shows, and there's that same feeling when you have an implied agenda, which is that we reject the alternative. We reject living miserably. We reject being tough on your own, and that being something for which you should attain.
Yeah.
Just in rejecting that, you start to endorse and accept the opposite.
Yeah, true. Saying that, I recently reached out a couple. I've said on here loads of times. I say to people, if you're struggling with anything, I don't have any answers, but just you can drop me a message. We'll have a conversation. I'm not an expert on anything, but just, you know, those lines are open for you just to take the pressure off and just go, yeah, I've been feeling it a little bit. And I reached out the other week and I just said on social media, I said, I need some work. I haven't got any money and I'm struggling a bit. Has anyone got any work? I don't want any handouts. I just need some money. I just need some work. And I was inundated with help. People messaged me, phoned me, going, oh, well, and not necessarily with jobs, but like, if you go through these links and go through that, you'll find something. And it was incredible. And I suddenly went, I suddenly realised that reaching out and asking for help, I found really difficult, because I'm of an age where we were told not to. We were told to push that down. And like you've just said about being a loner, you were like, it's tougher to be on your own and figure it out for yourself. And sometimes you don't know. You don't know where to turn. And I was lucky that I did have that within me to go, actually, I need some help. Where some people just don't have that.
When you got those responses, what did it do to your brain?
I cried. I cried when I was inundated, and I just had a moment. I was just sat in the kitchen, and I was just leaning against the cupboard, and I just started to cry, and it just felt because I felt stupid initially as well by asking. I felt really daft. I felt weak. I felt like I'd failed. But then the messages I got from people going, no, mate, it's good to, this is strength to reach out. And that's what I learned that, yeah, it takes a strength to reach down, get through all those voices that are telling you that you're a failure, to just put your hand out and go, give us a hand. I've still not processed it properly.
It's that brings us to that dominant theme, that strength and silence, which is nonsense because it's really easy to be silent. But it's really hard to defy what's expected of you. But I suppose, do you think that the positivity of that was because you felt part of a group and a group that supported you?
Definitely, there was an element of that. I think with this podcast, we've built a community. There's loads of people that regular listeners will message me all the time. Like, there's a guy, Steve Priest. We've got Rachel Wells. People that listen in, and I can see them talking to each other online, we've done live ones of these, and different facets of my life have come together, and now they're friends. Now they're meeting up, or they're going to be meeting up, and you know, you're absolutely right. We do need to feel part of something. You know, like youth culture, we don't really have those at the minute. Like we used to have, like, yeah, your skinheads and your mods and all that. And now it's so open, you could be into anything. And there isn't a thing to be a part of, is there?
Do you know who I blame? I blame the Kings of fucking Leon.
They were all right for two albums, then they fucked it.
Then they started dressing. They started dressing like fucking Topshop.
Yeah.
No, I totally blame them. But I honestly go straight into my absolute sweet spot. So my daughter is 16 and she is absolutely magnificent in every single way. She is a fucking goth. That's what
excellent.
She is.
Excellent. She, there is a goth within all of us.
Absolutely. She's not like a, you know, black wedding dress goth. She spends ages on her makeup and she looks fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
And she walks down the road and everybody looks at her and some people go, look at that. And then they'll go, yeah, she looks really brilliant actually. But what's brilliant is that she's a part of that tribe.
Yeah.
But she also really likes really cool music.
Excellent.
And that's her clothes are an expression of music. And that's what I did. I was listening. It was the Ian Stone one, wasn't it? Talking about skinheads.
Yes.
And actually on part of our, we, you know, as an organisation, we have like brand documents and stuff. And one of the pictures in that brand document put together by a really great bloke called Jonathan Morley in describing what Calm is, one of the photographs that he uses is 80s kids sitting on steps in Birmingham, two-tone kids.
Brilliant. So
black kids and white kids.
Just yeah.
Not even noticing the colour of each other's skin, obviously, but being united by the specials and by Jerry Dammers, you know, and by the fashion, by the hair, by the boots, by the sense of rebellion against everything that wasn't skinhead.
Yeah.
And I think I think that missing is such a shame.
Yeah.
That, you know, we had mods, and for me, casual was the thing.
Yes. Yeah.
And I still just can't, you know, pore over endless websites of Adidas trainers and
yesterday I had a massive conversation with someone about the superiority of the three stripes over everything. They're just
over everything.
Yeah, there is that need. We need that. It's like when you talk to people, I've got a radio show on Islington Radio, and I'll talk, it's all about the music, there's nothing else. And then I'll mention, I was talking about The, and I talk about this band, my favourite album, Infected. And many people messaged me to go, oh my God. And suddenly we're part of something.
Do you remember the Channel 4 films? Do you remember that? Do you remember that being on a Friday night?
Yeah.
They're all on YouTube, so you can still watch them all.
Yeah.
That album's fantastic.
Yeah. That whole, I remember my mate had the video with all the videos on it, and
it wasn't Channel 4 films, was it? It was on Channel 4. I recorded it and I wore the VHS out.
Yeah.
Watching it again. But also, here's an interesting thing then. How do we then counter? So Flossie, my daughter, is absolutely obsessed with the Decemberists, who are just a fantastic American band. But she's terrified of the day that other people learn how good the Decemberists are.
See, that's it, isn't it? It's being a part of a niche group.
It's niche, isn't it? That's what it is.
You want to be part of something, but not something that's mainstream, because then that's not cool. As soon as, like you said, Kings of Leon, as soon as they put on Topshop tops, it was fucked. Their first two albums, I remember meeting them once. Someone I know was looking after them when they first came over. And they went, come and meet the band. And I'm like, oh, I don't know what to say. Anyway, I wandered over and Caleb had his back to me. And as I leaned in to say, I'm really looking forward to the album, man, he kind of turned and his hair flicked and went in my mouth. So I've had Caleb Followell's hair in my mouth. And that was my introduction to them. And their first two albums, I remember trying to get to see him at Glastonbury. You couldn't get near the tent. It was packed.
Yeah.
And I loved, and you meet other people and you go, have you heard about this band, Kings of Leon? I go, oh, yeah, Molly's Chambers, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, as soon as it clicked over into mainstream and they turned into late Genesis, you go, shut up.
Have you ever seen the Kings of Leon in shreds? Have you ever seen that video?
No.
Oh, straight away after YouTube, Kings of Leon in shreds. So it's called something like Kings of Leon Worst Performance Ever. It's the funniest thing you'll ever see. So my daughter, Flossie, goes to the Leake Street Tunnels in Waterloo.
Yeah, 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 brilliant.
It's brilliant. So she meets up there, or she did a year and a half, a year ago, with, there's about 50 kids that like the same band. And they meet, they just have a meetup, and one of them brings stereo, and they just play that band really loud, and they just all meet each other. And
fantastic.
That's a real bond. They wear the same clothes. They love the same music. And yeah, that is lost, isn't it? And
so
for the youth to get, but that was, I remember in the 90s, I used to occasionally get confused between, I was so dually obsessed with music and football that I would kind of, they would blur almost completely.
Yeah.
Excuse the pun, they would blur. there was that sense of absolute unity. So not only standing on the North Bank at Arsenal and being a part of that and getting swept forwards and swept backwards and middle run to top side and all that.
It
was also the casual stuff, and it was the just this sort of a completely non-judgmental endorsement of the other people. The people next to me who dressed the same and like the same football team might have been absolute scumbags, but it didn't really matter.
No.
That we were able to transcend that.
It's funny. I'm not even. I don't follow football, and as soon as I say that to anybody, any man, they can't. You can see it. They go, oh. There's a moment. They go, ah. Oh. But the way that I still become, I'm still accepted in the group, is when I turn around and say, well, I don't really follow football, but I'm from South East London. My team would be Palace. And then I'd say, because I said Palace and not Crystal Palace, that keeps me in. And then all my mates when I was a teenager were all gooners. So we spent a lot of time in Highbury. I'm one of the last people to get thrown out of Highbury because I snuck in. My mate, his aunt worked in the ground, and he had his season ticket. And we managed to get through. We snuck through the cordons and got in. But because I was sort of hanging around in the roof struts of Highbury, I got found out and booted out. But that's how, funnily enough, I got kicked out. I went round to the T-Bird bar around the corner. There was a lot of people in from EMI. And I was sat with them, ended up getting pissed with them on this day. Yeah, so that's how I'm kept. That's how I keep my kind of, my man badge, is by saying, yeah, I'm one of the last people to get thrown out of Highbury. So,
yeah, but you know, why do you need a man badge?
Exactly.
Maybe the whole thing is you just like, you know, throw it away. But you do, though. But the thing is that it's all right to want a man badge. This is good area. I've never thought of this before, but it's all right to want that.
Yeah.
It's all right to want identity and endorsement. It doesn't make it a bad thing that we pursue, maybe it does make it a bad thing that we pursue things that we're kind of predestined to pursue and we don't make real choices. And that my 14-year-old, this is weird. When he was about three, I remember pushing him in a buggy. And when he saw a digger, he'd go, digger.
Right.
We have no interest in plant or interest in vehicles whatsoever. But, that's interesting. But maybe this predetermination that you should be, as a bloke, there are things that you should like and you shouldn't like. I guess maybe, I think there's things that you shouldn't like is undeniably harmful, unless those things that you shouldn't like are really, really profoundly illegal. But in saying there are things that you should like, maybe I'm in really dangerous gender stereotyping.
Right.
But maybe it's all right to like stuff that you should like, because maybe all we're looking for there is the tribal endorsement, because that's fundamentally something we need at a base level.
Yeah.
And there are probably 30 or 40 things that you should like. Just
not the second two Kings of Leon albums.
Not them.
Not the other one. Not the one or two. Fine. But I think there's. I think you're right. Sometimes I have conversations with especially men of our generation, and they're like, "But I quite like being a man. I like being this yeah. this, and I like it." You go, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, there's no reason why you shouldn't be that if you want to be that. It's not. You know, there's pressure put on that as well, isn't there?
That's such a key point.
Yeah.
That what Calm would never do ever is say you individual have to change who you are because you're wrong.
Yeah.
What we would say is maybe we might say, are you really being who you are?
Yeah.
That's sort of a slightly different question, I suppose. But I don't think that there is absolutely nothing wrong with it in expressing the forms of masculinity that have been endorsed elsewhere. If that's what you're into. I know I live in Twickenham and I do not understand rugby at all.
No.
I do not understand it. I don't understand it. Why have they put the ball down?
Yeah, right.
So you can pick and choose. You don't have to like it all.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, as long as you're not, you know, if you're a racist, sexist, homophobic arsehole, then yeah, you've got to change. But
yeah,
the fundamental things of being old fashioned values that were attached to being a man, not values, but those old fashioned ways of being. If that's who you are, then that's who you are. It's not bad at all, you know?
No, but I think if we're not careful, if we were to try to sort of overcompensate too much, then we could, I follow with interest. I go into some of the murkier depths of Twitter and follow people arguing about things that I don't find myself particularly bothered about. But just watch the fury of people arguing against, I mean, you said it really well earlier that it's black, everything is binary.
Yeah.
And you cannot be a good person who's done some bad things or a bad person who's done some good things. You are either good or you are bad.
Exactly.
And the fury with people fall out with on social media, which I guess is the purest reflection of how they feel in real life. They just don't, you know, we have these social mores. I mean, we don't actually do anything. It's about reciprocity, isn't it? But there is a danger that with masculinity, as we try to readjust and we try to compensate for the unhelpful, the dangerous elements of inherited masculinity, that we go too far and we start to try to punish people for rules that they either didn't write themselves or that they're not even aware of.
Yeah.
And like linguistically, I just fucking hate that terms like snowflake and woke. To think of the term woke as being just a catch-all criticism that we're going to fight back against woke. You know, Lord Rowntree, in spending his money helping the starving, he was woke.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Abraham Lincoln, woke.
Yeah, 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 it's always been there.
Woke. If we, you know, the language is really hard to navigate, but if we try to compensate so far the other way to take away the models of masculinity that we may deem from an outside perspective to be unhelpful, you then start to undermine the stuff that is really helpful, like climbing over the barriers at Highbury with your mates and getting caught in the roof or middle run to topside and all wearing exactly the same Reebok jacket.
It is helpful. Even though, like I say, even though not following football, being a part of that when I was a teenager was so important to me. You know, getting that phone call on a Wednesday, like, we're nipping up, right, we're going Highbury. You know, we're all going. And I wouldn't even be interested in the game, but I was interested in being around my mates. And we'd be on the North Bank and you're singing the songs, Can You Hear the Clock In, sing and all that. And it was a moment that I'm so pleased that I was part of. And I don't think we're doing any favours by telling men that they're bad for still doing that.
Completely. I totally agree. And maybe we can readjust the dynamic inside those tribes.
Yeah.
Clear advertising has been really shit for so long that you've got in any male group of males, you have to have those distinguishing types. Like you have to have the ladies man, the tough guy, the joker, yeah, the fat loser. And that is really unhelpful. But we can adjust that perspective to actually what is fundamentally going on. And that's the way we can get away from football, because there's a lot of people, I'm sure, you know, don't like football. But in any group dynamic, if we can really accentuate the fact that what we're doing as blokes gathering together as blokes is we are mutually looking after each other. That's what we're doing. We can't take down the wildebeest on our own. You know, we're
you're right. Yeah,
what we're actually having is a shandy, but we are. Whether or not historically, you know, we're able to admit that's what we're doing, and to say to mates. So actually, the group of mates that I've gone to football with since 1994, I don't think we've ever had a conversation where one of us has said, "You're right. How's it going?"
Yeah,
it definitely is. It is bants, I'm afraid to say. But we do understand that underneath that, the reason why we've been in cars going to Cardiff, listening to the Kings of Leon together for so long, going to cup finals and stuff, but always going to the same pub, always doing the same thing, always having the same conversation, is that there's an underlying unsaid, albeit, responsibility to support each other by doing the same thing again and again.
Yes. Definitely. Absolutely. 100%. I totally get that. Yeah, it's so true. And I can't wait to be able to do it again. And that's it. There is that where people go, "Oh, all you do is take the piss out of each other." We go, it's when they're not taking the piss. That's when you got to worry. You know, that there's that. And then that gets brandished as toxic masculinity. And you're like, no, it's not. It's that isn't what that is. There's affection and love there.
I had a couple of occasions did manage to go to the pub during all of this, though. I do have a couple of mates where it is the full on piss taking all the time. And I did, it was really kind of good. I mean, it was crushing and dark. We were sat in a pub and I did say, "Can we please just stop taking the
piss?" Yeah, if it's a bit relentless, then yeah. But to be able to turn around and go, "Honestly, lads, this is a bit much now." Yeah. Yeah. It's all about balance, isn't it? It's all about moderation and balance. And
crunchy and the smooth.
Simon, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for coming on, taking the time, and for your patience this morning. I really appreciate it. It's been an absolute joy to speak to you. If there's anything more we can do for Calm or with Calm, then that would be fantastic, because I'm really passionate about this. I really do want to help in any way I can. So
great. Thank you for having me. I just wish we could have had a pint in front of us, so that would have been
well, we'll do that. Let's do that. I'll come to Twickenham. There's a couple of nice places there, and
come to Waterloo, because I've literally this morning set the date for our office opening party.
Oh, perfect.
So it's going to be middle of July, so come to Waterloo, and we will finally be able to kick the world back into the shape it should be in.
I would really like that.
Thank you for having me. It's so valuable for us to be able to talk about Calm, and for people to one person to hear it and think, "I'll ring the helpline," is an incredible thing.
But absolutely,
for
one
person to think, maybe they'll have a look at their website and read some stuff, and maybe that'll make life a little bit easier. So it's brilliant. So we are utterly reliant and grateful for the channels to reach people that you've provided. So thank you.
Simon, thank you very much. I look forward to that pint.
Yes, 100%.
Insane in the membrane.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.